On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Jay Dandori. He is the CTO and co-founder of Truvetta. We're going to be talking about his journey to becoming a founder. He spent 20 years at Microsoft. He made a decision to launch a product, launch a company, and we're going to talk to him about some of those decisions and how he got there and leaving Microsoft and what Truvetta is up to, what they're doing. It's a really cool product. And also, you know, being a founder with definite business experience, what are some of the advantages and experiences he's had through the way. Jay, thanks for being on. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thanks, Amit. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, before we start, tell everybody what the company does.
Truvetta is a consortium, or we call it a collective, of over 30 health systems. And what it has is over 18% of daily clinical care across the United States. So we provide the most complete, timely, and clean EHR data with the kind of scientific rigor that researchers aspire for study of any drug, disease, or device.
I do. We'll dive a little bit more into what the company does, because I certainly think the product itself is very interesting, and we'll highlight it along the way. And obviously, we'll include your LinkedIn handle. People can dive in to learn a little bit more about you, because obviously you've got a great background. I can't cover the whole thing, but I wanted to make sure people were at a high level aware of kind of the discussion. Obviously, you spent a lot of time at Microsoft before founding Truvetta. You're a co-founder there. I always find it really interesting when, you know, I speak to guests and a part of the journey is leaving a very well-established company. In your case, you were there for a while. You were there for 20 years. And I guess the decision to leave isn't always easy. But what was the impetus, I guess, after, you know, after two decades at Microsoft, that you wanted to become a founder?
That's a question that I get all the time. To be precise, I was at Microsoft for 21 plus years. I started as a young developer, and I tell people I grew up at Microsoft. And Microsoft has been a phenomenal place. I grew up quite a lot, and in my last years, I was a technical fellow at Microsoft. And the last two products that I was dealing there was a consortium for financial systems and a supply chain insights kind of a product realm, where the primary focus was building a platform that has the underpinnings of data gravity. That means if you build a platform and the users of the platform that are leveraging it, they get better results, and thereby they contribute more data to the platform, and the platform keeps getting richer and richer. The story goes back to a little bit of 5 years before I started kind of a Truvetta. Our family, like anybody most of the families, we were hit with a lot of health issues. You know what I mean? I think my wife's dad passed away with cancer, and my wife's mother passed away with a rare disease, and my dad in 2020 January passed away for cancer. So in that 5 years, as somebody trying to take care of our loved ones, we were trying to exercise a lot of things. Is this the best care we can offer? What are the other opportunities? Who is the best physician, the clinician that I can go to? Are there any kind of research that is happening, you know, that we can be part of? And also the second thing is, as I was dealing with my dad in the most recent days, I saw that his treatment started initially in California, and we transferred him to Fred Hutch and UW here, University of Washington. And the process took so long and so hard that even I had to fly to California to bring the records of his in person. I was a human FedEx, you know, to be able to get the slides and things like that. So when I saw that, and my dad had a very aggressive form of cancer, and when I looked at it, and I wanted to see, is this the best care that we could do? Is there any kind of a clinical research that is happening? And I started to look for it. It is very hard to find on the internet. You can do a search on the web with the name. It'll give you a lot of this information, staging information and all. But that's about it. And you, most of the time, you see a lot of sad stories. You don't hear a lot of successful stories. Hey, I used this and this worked. You know what I mean? And things like that. And that actually bothered me. And the last 3-4 years, that was the kind of a thing that really, I was thinking, man, something needs to be done in the healthcare industry. So that I had that interest. And when in March of 2020, when Terry, who I worked a little bit with at Microsoft, you know, he reached out to me and explained me what he was trying to look at. It really kind of intrigued my, you know, kind of an interest. The two things that I, if I tell, number one is Microsoft, because Microsoft focuses on a lot of horizontal breadth kind of a platforms, typically it leaves the last mile, they call it, app or anything, to ISVs or other vendors, you know what I mean? So that's why when you are building a platform or a product, you cannot realize your entire potential of your thought process or the idea. Okay, so that's why when I looked at this and I said, wow, this is a place where we can build that last mile, whether it is for physicians, whether it is for researchers, whether it is for the patients themselves, and the meaningful purpose that we are actually heading to, you know, do this through it, really, really, really caught my attention. And it was like, I could not take my mind off of thinking what we can do to phenomenally change the world. I know Microsoft did not make it easy for me to leave because they said, hey, you could build a platform and Terry could use the app, build app on top of it, and the whole nine yards. But still, the very interest to build that last mile, because having experienced that in the last 5 years, you know what I mean, is what actually I thought, okay, I should do this. And we have come up with a phenomenal vision statement too, is saving lives with the data, because as a technology guy, have seen how data can do the wonders in creating better outcomes. I was more convinced than anybody else that, hey, if we could create a compelling platform, a data gravity platform for health data, we can really save lives. And that's what made me to say, I should do this. So
I love that, because obviously you mentioned dealing with other verticals within Microsoft. This was something new to you. Do you think, and again, I mean, obviously healthcare is big. I mean, it's one of the most largest industries globally. But if you didn't have the personal experience dealing with your family's healthcare issues, is this something you think you come across? Is it something you value? Because obviously you referenced Terry. Is it something you would have listened to and said, hey, I see the potential? Or was there really the personal connection of, you know, having gone through the health issues that you've mentioned with your family? Is that something that was the driver?
If I think about it, anytime a meaningful purpose really turns the heads of people, you know what I mean? But at the time you look at what is on the other side? You know, you look at what are the other things that are going to come out of it. You know what I mean? Your career, financial stability, you know, the whole other things that come into it. And in my case, and I would be lying if I said anything else, the purpose and what I have experienced, you know, in my own case, that showed me that there is a lot that can be done. And actually, you know, early days, me and Terry, when we were talking about it, man, if we did this Truveta right, Truveta could get a Nobel Prize. You know, if we can really do what we want to do, accomplish with this company. So that is very valuable. And I think that purpose is what actually turned my head. And it is hard, you know what I mean? I think as a tech fellow or a CVP at Microsoft, you get paid very well, and it's hard to beat it any day. So, but the focus on the purpose probably is my biggest thing.
Interesting. I guess, you know, and maybe this is a question that you'll be answering for somebody who's listening to the podcast that is at a bigger company that feels secure, that feels comfortable, that might be thinking, I've seen an opportunity, it would be interesting. Obviously, there's a security to a certain extent at having a very large brand be your employer. You know, that obviously beat Microsoft is, you know, depending on the day, either the biggest or the second biggest company in the world, right? I mean, it's an advantage to leave that comfort, to leave it, to go start and take on risk. And obviously you have passion, right? That I think that's a clear driver. I can hear it. But to leave and to take on the risk, I guess walk us through the thought process, because I'd like other people to hear that, because I think there are probably a lot of people that are in similar situations that don't see how to bridge to that next step.
So if you look at, you know, if I step back and look at it, what do big companies provide? You know, I'm not going to tell in this that, oh my God, there's a bureaucracy. People talk about all these sorts of things. You know, whenever there are more than two people, there are many semantics that come into any company. Okay. But if you look at what big companies like Microsoft provide you, is a very well-defined structure to be able to build product and extract value. Okay, extract value for itself, extract value for the customers and everything. And it has a fantastic arm of how do you market it, how do you target it. You come up with a beautiful user base that you don't need to start at a ground zero. And you also have a trust with your user base. You know what I mean? Each company builds the trust. Okay, that is something. It's unmatched, you know what I mean? That's what you need to look at. The number two is, I always tell to the people, you know what I mean? I was entrepreneurial at Microsoft, and Microsoft supported all my entrepreneurial thoughts and ideas, and I built three or four V1 products. V1 made first time we brought it to the market. So I think that entrepreneurialness or building a new product can be done at big companies, okay? It's not the driver is, hey, I wanted to build something from V1. Okay. The only thing that you look at is in the companies like Microsoft, when I explained you my first 1 month at Truetta, I realized how many Microsoft resources I was missing. That whether you call it IT, whether you call it the, you know, all the lab setup, you know what I mean, the platform, you know, access and everything. And you will realize that being at the big company, you take so many things for granted, okay? And that is something you will not have in a startup, you know what I mean? Because you need to build things from scratch. You need to build the, you know, the small company culture, and you do not have infinite resources, you know what I mean? You need to be always looking at, wow, what is the minimum viable resources that I could use and accomplish the task, you know what I mean? What is the best way I onboard my customer? You know what I mean? What is the most cost-effective way for the customer? All this framework, when you need to think through ground up, while it causes jitters, it caused me jitters in the first 1 month, but that's what is the exciting thing, you know what I mean, when I look at it. That's number one. Number two is when you are in a big company, because of the nature of it, you don't get to play a lot of different roles. You know what I mean? Can I take part in how the product is going to be marketed, branded? You know what I mean? I think so. Whereas in a small company, it is your job as well as responsibility. And also it is a stress too. You know what I mean? Because once you build it well, you need to make sure that it goes to the masses in the way that you want, and you build a perception that you want to be built on the product. And the one thing I can tell is, in a small company, what you get is a more directed, focused, and a purpose-driven. Okay, this purpose can be your vision of the company, or the purpose could be, I want to make great wealth for myself and the people in the company, or I want to do X, I want to be a CXO or a C blah for the company. Those are the kind of things, that purposes that are going to drive you to do and get the best out of you. You know what I mean? And that's what I see is the, you know, the fun thing when you look at it. You know what I mean? It is and I know, you know, first 3 months, it also gave me the paycheck shock, right? You know what I mean? What you
100%.
Okay, so all those things that you need to look at it, but one thing is for sure is when your eyes and mind are set on the purpose that you're going to drive, and that excites you and that wakes you up every day and brings you to the work, and if you think that's what it is connecting with you, I think this is a fun journey that I would recommend to anybody. But if you are a kind of a person that you're going to look at, like you invest in a stock and look every day how it is doing, this is not, startup is not the day for, thing for you. You know what I mean? So
that's actually a great analogy, because I think a lot of people who do invest in stocks are constantly looking. And if you're in a startup, you're in the trenches. If you're judging progress every day, that could drive you insane, because obviously there is a journey, there's a trajectory. When you mentioned losing resources, leaving Microsoft, you know, day one, you're doing a lot of stuff. You're wearing 10 hats.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do you, I guess, you know, those are some different types of leadership you have to start absorbing that you previously could pick up a phone or message or call or whatever it is. How did you start like understanding how to allocate your time to those different types of roles? Because it's easy to get really stuck into, oh, I just need an accounting system, or I need something, and just lose focus because you're trying to solve that problem, and then to realize, well, you know, the product is still more important.
I think the one thing I would tell you is, and I have this luxury of, and every day I thank, you know, my luck is, being at Microsoft, I was able to work with some of the brightest individuals in each of the area, whether you talk about product, whether you talk about strategy, whether you talk about marketing, whether you talk about finance and things like that. And those connections are invaluable. Okay. And these deep connections help you quite a lot. And of course, these connections will help you only when you have a proper reputation. And I know I sell this to people, right? Hey, I was at 5 years at the company, but I don't have any network. Your network is as good as your reputation. Okay? Every person needs to strive. I know I don't want to sound preachy, but the reputation for yourself, reputation as a friend, reputation as a colleague, reputation as a manager, reputation as your technical, you know, skills. And this connections and this reputation and network travels with you. Okay. So people need to have a good assessment of their network and their, you know what I mean? All this and reputation. And the success that you built in that reputation will travel with you. And that you could leverage. For example, when I had to create a certain structure, build structure for us, where when we are looking at thinking about, we are building our security infrastructure, do we follow NIST or BSON? What is the best way to go for it? Or when you're looking at what is the best way to build the build structure, you know, how do you actually do continuous builds? There are many people, I'm so fortunate I can pick up a phone and call, because there were so many people at Microsoft were doing this, and they're the best at doing that, you know what I mean? And they can give you the advice, which is priceless, you know what I mean? You can read 10 books, but still giving the practical aspects of it is very, very, very good. So that's what I tell is, the biggest thing that will come when you're building for yourself, first thing is you have to build optimally, because you do not have the infinite number of resources or anything like you're in a big company. You need to build it in a most inexpensive way, because in the end, you need to look at, hey, this is the minimum viable footprint that can get me to my mission and vision that I want to solve, and a path where I can iterate faster, where I can be agile, you know what I mean? Where the company, the employees are also having fun being there. See, for example, people come, they get excited about our vision, and they come inside them, and they see that to do a single task, they need to do 10 or 20 or 20 other tasks as a tax for doing it. They will lose fun of it. So that's why, how do you actually bridge this gap so that people will be able to be more effective and productive at the minimal footprint? You know what I mean? That's why sometimes we make some hard decisions. We don't give the entire options of the enchilada that what we used to get, what a typical Microsoft developer would get. And things. So these are the kind of decisions or optimization And I have this good quote I read in one of the articles, and the thing is, when you have infinite number of resources, a system that you build is way different from you do not have infinite resources or you have constraints, okay? If you do not have these constraints, the way you build it is way different than when you have constraints and still you thrive and survive and build that system, it's a piece of beauty.
I like that. I could see how that the resource constraint or riches does impact how you go about building your solution and trying to get to that viable stage that you were mentioning. What has surprised you? I'm curious. So, like, you've been a founder for a while. I mean, the company is no longer in the early stages. You've gone through the process. What surprised you about being a founder?
In the surprise, the number one that I get is when you are starting in the first 6 months, your role as a founder is way different from 6 to 12 months to 12 to 24 months. I can see how much of my responsibility is going into much more functional in nature. And I don't want to discourage people in saying so, but still, when you are in the beginning, you wear multiple hats, you know what I mean? Because there are fewer number of people. So you're doing multiple tasks and you're getting good at everything. You're trying to do a lot of things. It's fun and it's stress still. You know what I mean? Don't get me. And as we were growing, we're bringing specialists in to be able to do that particular task. And then almost all the founders settle into the things that they're good at, the things that they are known in the industry for or in the business for. So the thought process that I had as a founder that I will do this, everything now, if I look at my day-to-day, what I was doing as a, you know, at Microsoft versus two, it is very technical. And of course, I get involved in when there is a customer deal or, you know what I mean, how to actually decide pricing and things like that. But still, there are other specialists that we brought in and we entrusted them to make those decisions so that, you know what I mean, it's a different way that you get involved, you know. That's number one. Number two, I will tell you, this is the biggest thing when I think about being in a Microsoft and thinking about a problem and being as a founder or in a startup thinking about a problem. In Microsoft, you can pick up the phone. Of course, I had a sexy title too. So you can pick up the phone and anybody would pick up the phone and talk to you. Okay? Because in Microsoft, for any problem space, you are treated as an incumbent. Okay? So you have this incumbent mindset in Microsoft. But whereas when I look at in my startup, you need to turn it into a challenger mindset. And that is a very, very, very critical difference. You know what I mean? And it is hard to make the transition, my friend. I'm telling you, because that's where I think people get lost in their first year of the journeys and everything, is they cannot make the transition. You know what I mean? Because in a challenger mindset, you are in the you have to convince either a customer or either a, you know, anybody. You need to convince, and you are coming in as a challenger. You're not taken as an incumbent. You need to build the trust at the ground go. Your reputation will travel with you. Hey, you have built great products in financial industry, but I've not seen anything yet in the healthcare. Healthcare is totally different. Okay, so that is the, you know, crux of the difference, that mindset difference somebody needs to drive, and you cannot take anything for granted and in the challenger mindset.
I guess final question, because I think what you just said in your experience at Microsoft makes me kind of think about, you were at Microsoft long enough to see it go through, I guess, being very dominant to having to rediscover itself to being again exceptionally dominant. When you think about what you've seen in the evolution, and really, I think that's what we're talking about, the evolution of Microsoft. When you're looking at your own business and you're like, you know what? I can see how I need to think about the future to a certain extent. Obviously, you're still executing your startup. But when you think about some of those takeaways from Microsoft and its evolution, is there anything that you apply to how you view your own business?
I think the number one, what I see is building trust, whether it is with your employees, whether it is with your customers, you know, whether it is with your partners. That is the number one thing. If I were to say one thing when I look back in the Microsoft, you know, thing that I would like to emulate at Truvita is that. You know what I mean? Because that is the place you can attract more talent, you can get more customers, you can get more partners so that you can participate in the overall ecosystem. That's number one. Number two, you need to have this ability to decide how much risk to take, when to take, and what is the shape of the risk that you want to take, because the risk that you take is not just your single risk anymore. Now we have, give or take, almost 300 employees. You know what I mean? So every risk has to be measured. People have come with a great, you know, our vision statement speaks to itself, and people look at this as a purpose and come in. But every decision you make, you need to calibrate, you know, the risk. You know, are you going towards your vision? Is it going to create that ground-changing thing? And third thing, it's very important. I know it's not the third, but in the end, the financial, you know, well-being of the company, you know what I mean? And you need to look through how much you're spending today and what is your, you know, roadmap looks like, and when will you run out of the money, or what exactly are the things that you need to do? How is your revenues measuring up? You know what I mean? All those things you need to pay very, very close attention to. You know what I mean? I know in Microsoft, I used to say, whenever I find a very smart person, I would go and hire them. Okay. Probably here, I'd say that, hey, I'll call you back. You know, I would love to be with you with Truvita, but I'll call you back. So those are the kind of things that you need to look at. I know I'm going into the kind of the basics of, because if you do not, then you are taking certain amount of risk, and every risk actually compounds itself. Okay. And you find yourself in a kind of a different situation.
I actually think that's a great way of thinking about it. And going back to your analogy of the stock market, I think people don't know how to calibrate risk and account for it because they don't understand. So they use very arbitrary ways of dealing with risk. And in your case, you know, if the finances are not there, you're not going to be in the position 5 years from now to take advantage of hiring the smartest person that shows up.
Yep.
Awesome, Jade. I really want to thank you for coming on, sharing. I love the story. I love the purpose and the drive behind Truvita. I think it's going to resonate with everyone. Thank you for sharing with us. What's a good way of reaching out to you and just being able to connect with you regarding what you've talked about on the show?
I think the best is us, you know, Truvita.com is a great place to learn and see what we are doing. And second place is LinkedIn. LinkedIn, we continuously publish. Our marketing team does a phenomenal job of having every beat captured. Okay, that's a great resource. And people can connect with me on LinkedIn. And I would love to connect. And if people have any extra questions and they want to brainstorm a thing or two, I'm always here, you know, for great discussions.
Awesome. Thanks again. Thank you for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Absolutely. That's it for the episode. We'll be back again, different guests, different topic. Until then, two things. One, I really thought this was a great episode around someone who had a very successful career at a very large company and decided to become a founder and talk about the purpose behind it, the journey. I think Jay did a great job. Please share this with other people that will benefit from the story or just want to hear a great story. I think anyone would. So please keep sharing the episode. And also like, subscribe, comment, let me know how we're doing on the podcast. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.